Mother, man.
This is Adrian.
And this is Grant.
We're from Executus.
And this is...
Spreading faster than a case of the clap in a trailer court. Able to shatter eardrums within a 666-mile radius. A podcast more brutal than all the rest. It's Murder Metal Mayhem. This is Pete Altieri with the Murder Metal Mayhem podcast. I'm here with my co-host Shane Borchuk from Winnipeg, Manitoba, in Canada, and we are doing an interview with the blackened thrash metal band Executus from Adelaide, South Australia. Adelaide has actually been in our top 10 cities listening to Murder Metal Mayhem for months, and we also have had Sydney as well as Melbourne in there as well. So hell yeah to our Australian listeners. You guys kick total ass, and I got to ask you guys, what's the weather like today over there in Australia, or tomorrow, I guess, however you want to look at it?
Well, currently it's beautiful blue skies and about 23 Celsius, which we're already going to struggle.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's actually pretty mild for an Australian
city. It is.
It's usually cranking 40 degrees from Christmas onwards. It's, yeah, been quite tame this year.
And Shane, can you translate that 40 degrees? Because I know you're a fellow Celsius person. Right?
23 is perfect. 40 is just too fucking hot.
Okay, yeah. Too fucking hot. All right, I'll go with too fucking hot then. All right. So we're winter here. So you're in summer. I always get a kick out of that. So very cool.
Is it snowing?
No, it's actually been a mild winter so far for us. So the S word has not arrived.
Mildest winter ever, pretty much.
Now, where Shane lives, they get like feet of snow up there. So I'm not north like him, but
I'm trying to picture what a Christmas with snow looks like. I think that's
watch any Christmas movie. Watch a Christmas movie, because I haven't seen one of them where it's summer out, right? Like you guys. All right.
Yeah, normally it's around 104 Fahrenheit this time of year.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Yeah, in Adelaide in particular, you get that two weeks of about 36 degrees, which is, let's have a look here. Whoop, I've got my Google open just to help me here. 96 to about 105, you'll get like 2 weeks straight. Wow. And sometimes it won't dip below like 90 Fahrenheit. Like it just cooks. Man.
That's
but
crazy.
In Adelaide, it's dry heat. Like there's no humidity at all. It's just dry.
Interesting.
Instant sunburn.
Interesting. Well, Shane,
right.
Take it off, buddy.
Right on. Hey, guys, I'm Shane. You know, welcome to Murder Metal Mayhem. I think it's just awesome that we have three countries involved in the interview here today. We got Australia, Canada, and the United States brought together through the magic of the internet. And can you guys introduce yourselves and the members who aren't there, and let the listeners here know what you do in the band.
Yeah, cool. Well, I'm Grant. I am the vocalist and the rhythm guitarist. Around 10 years ago, I think Adrian and I started writing riffs back when we were both working at the same place out in the middle of nowhere, working for a tech company. And we both liked the same shit, started writing similar stuff. And that's how we got to where we are now.
So my name's Adrian. As Grant mentioned, I'm in through work. I just moved here to Adelaide. I'm originally up from here from a different state called New South Wales. And we both had a love for heavy metal music, and we thought, hey, let's go and jam. And I think,
what are you playing?
Oh, yeah, so I play lead guitars.
He makes the scenes. The thing. And we've got, not here today, we've got Kim, bass player, and Francis, or Owen, our drummer.
Excellent.
And, Kim, I went to high school with Kim. I've known him forever. We just used to, I think we may have even jammed in a band back in high school when I used to play the drums. And Francis, we met just the traditional, put a poster up, like thrash
metal. Oh, that's cool.
We needed a drummer, and every drummer in Adelaide was in 1,000 bands, which I'm sure
they are.
Yeah, and he keeps reminding us that like he turned down the offer to go and play in like I don't remember what other band it was who have like gone. Look, Matt, like you and I have a chill. Yeah. We're more relaxed. We tour selectively. You know, we take our time.
That's cool. Yeah. And as a bass player, you know, I'm going to say that you know the fact that you guys don't have the bass player here definitely. You know, a couple of points off there, but that's okay. Of course. I usually bass geek out with the bass players. That's for sure. So,
well, like I said, we met up at the pub on Friday and we're like, let's do this. Can you come into the interview? He's like, oh, look, maybe. And then on the morning, he's like, nah. I'm like, come on, man.
Yeah, I appreciate you doing this in the morning for you guys. So. But the name of the band, Executus, a little different. A lot of times when I'm scrolling, like all of us, it's just something that might pop, the name of the album, whatever it is. But Executus caught my eye. Who came up with that? And is there some sort of deep-seated meaning with that? Anything interesting?
It's far less deep than you might imagine.
Like so somebody's just cat or something?
No. No, I mean, almost that obscure. But yeah, so like, I threw that one into the ring. We were, the traditional problem of trying to name a band. We had ideas going around. I'm like, what about Executus? And everyone's like, yeah, that's cool. And I'm like, cool. And then like, no one really asked where it was from for a while. I was like, if you want to know, it's a boss from a dungeon in World of Warcraft.
Cool. So
in the original raid way back in like 2004, although they're rehashing it all now, there was the second in charge was Major Domo Executus. And he ends up getting killed by the end boss as a sacrifice to the Flame Lord. So I'm like, that seems fitting. That seems black metal enough.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And yeah, it's just a lot of that lore, that sort of, you know, Warcraft is very, you know, riffs on all different sci-fi and all different Bloodborne, Lovecraft, all that kind of good stuff is in there. So it's just right on point thematically as well.
You actually hear some of that in the intro to our Escape Reality, which was our EP that we released, I think, back in 2017.
Yeah, cool.
So just at the start of that, the first track, you'll actually hear
Ragnaros.
Yeah. Okay. Very cool.
Well, that kind of blends into my next question here, World of Warcraft. And I see that you guys are kind of self-proclaimed nerds. And, you know, I love sci-fi and fantasy myself. It looks like that's a big part of your inspiration. Like you had said, it's Lovecraft influence. And I've heard mention of Yog-Sothoth, Azathoth, the multiverse. Am I on point here with that? And what sort of stuff specifically inspires your music lyrically?
Well, it's just the lyrics are mostly Kim, our bass player, who's here, and myself. Kim's a big Bloodborne Lovecraft fan, and I bring in a lot of that sort of, I guess, more pop culture-y reinterpretations of it through Warcraft and things like that. But, you know, for me, I'm a big fantasy novel nerd. I've got, you know, The Way of Kings over here, both Fred and Sanderson, which I've been reading. I just dig into all that kind of like real hard fantasy stuff. You know, obviously can't go wrong with Lord of the Rings and all those sort of things. So I've got more of that fantasy side of things, but you know, always been a big sci-fi fan. Thanks to my dad mostly. We used to sit down and watch Star Trek Next Gen back in the day together, and Blade Runner, Aliens, all those classics. For me, it's just sort of like, yeah, I think I'm more of a Hollywood sci-fi kind of thing. Like things like Starship Troopers always gave me a laugh, which is why there's a bit of like tongue-in-cheek in there as well, because it's that like, it's sci-fi, but it doesn't take it seriously. That's mm-hmm. what I've always really like.
Yeah, that's very cool. Very cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. Now, I definitely love my Australian metal. I mentioned to you guys In Malice's Wake, probably one of my favorite bands. I really dig those guys. I've become good friends with Sean Ferrugia from the band and been listening to a lot of the other bands as well, Harlot, Idle Ruin, some really great bands from Australia. But what is the scene like specifically where you guys are in South Australia? And do you get out and travel much to other parts of your country?
So, the scene in Adelaide is actually, it's very strong. Considering the population that we have here in Adelaide, I think there's only about 1,000 people. So the quality of...
In the scene, you mean?
But I'm saying, like, population-wise, like, the scene is actually really well represented. I don't know if you're familiar with some of the other Adelaide bands, such as Hidden Intent. So they were recently playing in... Bakken and
They Belfast. Came over to the States, I think, with Angelus Apatrida, if I'm not mistaken.
Times. And what was Corey's band?
Oh shit! Yes, I'm thinking Shatterbrain, but that's not them. And there's like Akira. There's a few bands.
Yeah, Dissidia. Shadow Realm. What I'm trying to say is there's some really, really good music that's coming out of Adelaide. It's just a bit of a shame that we're so far away from everybody else in the country. In order to play to lots of people, you've really got to travel. And one of our first trips interstate was, pack the car.
That was quite
cool.
Back into the van.
Bass amps, guitar amps, and just drive across country where you see nothing but blades of grass for 6 hours. Cool. And then all of a sudden there's a town and you're like, okay, cool, we'll play there.
That sort of, the outback tours of Ballarat, Port Augusta.
Port Augusta, Ballarat, Hill.
All that fun stuff. Mm. I mean, it's a good drive. Not so good when you're as hungover as I was, but,
Right. Yeah, I remember looking at one city to another in Australia, and it was like 18 hours or something like that. Holy shit, that's crazy. Yeah, I mean, here in the States, you're hitting major cities within a couple, 3 hours of each other, like all day long, so.
No, I'm used to that in Canada. We got lots of isolated communities, and I'm on the prairies, so you can drive 6 hours flat, no problem.
Yeah, I'm halfway between Chicago and St. Louis, 3 hours either way, and Indianapolis, 3 hours east. So I'm surrounded by – I'm in a pretty rural area, but I'm within striking distance of quite a few different places like that.
I reckon Melbourne's probably the cruisiest drive, sort of 8 hours, mostly through populations, only 3 hours of – potential run out of petrol, food, and water. Driving to Sydney is a nightmare. It's 18 hours and 12 hours of just in hay planes. There's one city, and
that's crazy.
It's straight road as well, so you get that whole in call of the void, oh my god, and pull over. But in terms of the LA metal scene, we've really played a few gigs around local haunts, I guess, on which sadly some of them have now shut down.
Yeah, they have very recently too.
Through COVID, they really struggled, a lot of places, taking out loans and stuff to try and stay alive. But in the end, they just didn't get enough bands through, which is a bummer. And just it seems like a lot of the punters never really returned in force afterwards. But we still, we still get some good bands. I saw Sepultura at a place here recently, and that was packed, about 1,000.
Yeah, they're all coming through now, isn't it? Harsh Enemy wasn't too long. We've got Blind Guardian coming soon. So
the band's coming back, which is always awesome.
That's cool.
And a few of those other dudes run a few big festivals as well, which is pretty cool.
I saw Jungle Rots coming down there. They're a bass player, is a buddy of mine. Nice. They're playing there, I see, next year. So with a good tour as well with them.
I love a good Jungle Rot riff.
Yeah, Jungle Rot's badass.
Groove death metal, I guess you'd call it.
Right.
It's so good. Love the groove. I'm talking too much.
That's all right. No
worries. No worries. So the new album, The Black Throne of Chaos Abandoned, it sounds fucking great. And, I always like to mention the bass because it's just missing in a lot of metal, but you can actually hear the bass. Your mixing and production is just excellent. It's very professional. So what was your recording process like? Did you use a traditional studio or was this all DIY?
So this was, we went to a studio for mixing, for recording and mixing here. The place is called Against the Grain Studios, run by a gentleman called Andy Kite. We actually recorded our Escape Reality EP with him as well. So we knew him rather quite well. And what we like about him is he's a pretty chill kind of guy. You can rock up and just, sort of record your stuff. And if it sounds crap, he'll pull you up on it too. He'll be like, no, got to record again.
No, he's kind of, as you would say, like more of a, traditional, as traditional in the Pro Tools era as it can be. So, we do, I guess the general process for most of our songs is I've got a bit of a home setup here, and Adrian does as well. We record all our demos and stuff into a door of we use Reaper, which is just a good name. But yeah. The guys that wrote Winamp went on to do that. So you gotta trust those guys. We just like lay down. I've got my equipment and monitors here. Lay down some rough tracks. Because I was drumming beforehand, I usually program in drums on Easy Drummer just to sort of get a feel for what a riff and something might look like. And we bring that in to the studio, and pretty much Francis will play over the top our drummer to record in drums. Then we just layer up a billion guitar tracks.
We like to play the song live a couple of times.
Yeah,
two.
We never record it unless we play it live. It's a usual rule.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I always put it with a few tracks, especially one on the album called "The World's Great." So
we're going to cut it.
we're almost going to cut the track, and it wasn't quite driving live. The few times we played it, and so we went back and rewrote the chorus and. Rewrote the vocal lines completely and the phrasing behind them whilst we're in it, just before the studio. And actually vocals was inside the studio itself. And we found just doing that process is like a two-stage check just to make sure that the song is up to the quality that we were hoping to deliver.
There's a lot of interesting things that happened this time. Like normally I would come up with all the vocal lines beforehand and just try and like get them all down. Whereas this time, because Kim was writing the lyrics, I was just sort of going, oh, well, how would I deliver this and trying to figure out the right phrasing. But then Kim actually came in and did a lot of, I guess, vocal producing for certain lines. I was like, try this phrasing, try that phrasing. So he's really, bass player, but also, he can build out some vocals pretty well as well. So he was just like, let's try like this pattern or like hold that word a little bit longer. And some of the songs where we collaborated more, like, funny enough, like more viewpoints making a song better, but having him come in and like vocally produce, particularly The World's Grave, Invocation, Provoke, those songs were falling a bit flat until the vocals came in, and then all of a sudden.
I love The World's Grave. That's a killer song, man. It was tough to pick one just to play one at the end of this. Interview. What about the songwriting part of it? I mean, how does that? Do you guys write independently of each other, or is everything done kind of as a band, or how do you do it?
It starts a bit independent. So Grant would be, as I said, we've each got our own sort of recording, mini recording studio at home. So I'll record something, try and come up with a few riffs, and then I might hit a brick wall, and then I'll throw it over to Grant. Grant can have a look at it and continue on there, and that'll be vice versa. A lot of the times, and Grant might just go through and just record a whole rhythm track start to finish, and then I'll go over it and do the leads and work some harmonies in and sort of build the layers on top. So, yeah, there's kind of two main ways.
There's two modes. Yeah. Sometimes I might have had a bottle of wine or some beers and be like, all right, I've got a song. And sometimes they just fall out. So like The World's Grave, that was one that literally just came out in one night, pretty much the first time. Just like headphones on, guitar on, like, don't talk to me, children. I've got a song to write. And it comes out, you're like, cool. And I think Executives Rising was a similar. There's a few on the album that were just like, bang.
Yeah.
Like, they just really came out.
Provoke, on the other hand, Provoke Not Provoke to Rap. That was a bit of a slog, that one.
Fucking hell.
It's, yeah.
Yeah, that song just evolved. I think we first because I've got all our, you know, our demo tracks from years and years. I reckon we first had some of those riffs in 2018 even.
Yeah.
And just like got to a point, oh, we got a thunder. got to a point where we were like, this isn't working, let's park it and then do some other songs and then come back. Oh, I finally got a chorus for this song. Yes.
Right.
Like, and it unblocks it. So we keep a lot of the riff bank hot, I guess.
Yeah.
And farm that for, you know, for music. But it's mostly, I'd say predominantly Adrian and I are writing most That's of cool. the riffs and a lot of the placeholder drums. And then yeah, then it's really getting the practice studio, and Francis just adds a lot of, he's a real groove oriented drummer, like lots of ghost notes and stuff. He just likes to halftime things randomly, and which is always good fun. And so that's what ends up in the studio.
Yeah,
which is cool.
That's cool.
That's very cool and good collaboration. So we always love to ask bands this next question. It's kind of like the modern equivalent of tape trading back in the days, and we'll have you guys go first, then Pete and I will add a couple. But what bands are you guys listening to that our listeners may not know about?
Whoa, I can't remember the name of them, but I'm gonna go for it right now. I'm listening to a band called, oh no, they've got 12,000 monthly listeners, probably they might know of it, but Carnosis. Who are they're like the Black Dahlia Murder worship. They just a Swedish band, absolutely killer riffs, but then they throw in some cattle decapitation style stuff. It's really good. So I'm listening to Carnosis like at the moment.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I'm cheating because I've got a Spotify.
That's all right. I learn about so many great bands this way. I interviewed Harlot. And that's how I found out about In Malice's Wake. And it's just, it's amazing how many of these have learned this way. What about you, Adrian?
Yeah. Two bands. I was actually listening to Hell Ripper, if you're familiar with that
Love
band.
Love Hell Ripper. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was listening to their Warlock Scrimmage with the Hags over here, actually. And I was just blaring that.
Nice.
So that's quite good.
Wasn't that Riley Death Thrash? Wasn't that his number one album this year? I thought that's what I saw.
Yeah.
I know that couple of guys. Is he the dude from Banger TV?
No, he's from Australia. I think he's from Melbourne, if I'm not mistaken. But I follow him on Facebook because he is like dead on what I like. I mean, almost every time he shares something, I really dig it. So.
Cool.
That may be how I found out about you guys. I don't remember offhand how that happened.
Yeah, I'm in a social media black hole. I don't do any Facebook or Twitter or anything. So people are like, have you heard of this or seen that guy? I'm like, nope. I'm just like living my life.
What about you, Shane? I know you and I listen to stuff a lot. What are a couple bands you might want to mention for these guys?
Well, I got to mention somebody on my album of the year list, and they're Canadian, and the smaller band called Raider, and their new album, Trial by Chaos.
Yeah,
it's just killer. A fucking banger. And then I've been listening to something that's metal, but it's kind of alt prog metal, and I didn't even know they released a new album until I listened to the last Murder Metal Mayhem, and Chris said, hey, there's a new Polka Dot Cadaver, and it's like, fuck, how did I miss that? So, yeah, that's a great album. I've been listening to that.
Interesting. Nice. Interesting. Now, I'm going to share two that were also in my top 10 as well. The number one album I had of the year, The Bleeding, is the band. They're from the UK, and the album called Monocrater. It's absolutely brutal, death thrash. And then the other band, which I compared somewhat to you guys in the review I did of you, Chronicle from Denmark, unbelievable. Okay. Where Chaos Thrives. That album is amazing. And they were the other black and thrash band in my top 10. So definitely along the lines of you guys, extremely musical, very well put together songs. I mean, really, really impressive stuff. So there you go, Shane, some nice modern day tape trading. Definitely love that question. And then here's another one. I told you, when we started doing this, that you're going to get a question or two that make you go, what? So this is a real question, okay? If you guys had to pick one person to die in an executive's mosh pit, would it be A, Machine Gun Kelly, B, Justin Bieber, or C, Fred Durst? And I want you each to answer and give me a why. Yeah, Machine Gun Kelly, Justin Bieber, and Fred Durst getting just trampled upon in an executive's mosh pit. What do you think?
Well, I don't think I could pick Fred Durst. I watched way too much old 2000s WWF and WWE to say anything bad about that guy.
We're process of elimination. I love this. I also wouldn't pick Fred Durst because $3 bill, y'all, or whatever, the first album before
Chocolate Starfish,
whatever. Yeah, the one before that.
Oh, okay.
That was, you know, I'm not ashamed to admit that in the late 90s, the new metal craze did hit my life, and I didn't mind a bit of Limp Bizkit back in the day.
Well, so, one of our hosts, Joey, he's a big Limp Bizkit fan, and I give him shit about it all the time, so that's okay. All right.
That vibe is pretty good. No, but I'm committing. I would go Justin Bieber.
Justin Bieber, okay. Just yeah, because
my reasons are just because he represents a lot of what I dislike about music.
I think that's a good Adrian. That's would fair. You are you agreeing with that, Adrian? Are you
yeah, getting... look, it has to be Justin Bieber, but mainly because I don't really know Machine Gun Kelly.
He's really obnoxious. He's really obnoxious. Yeah. You know,
I'm a little bit old man yells at the cloud. Like I just don't engage with pop culture much. At
that's
all
right.
Have you heard of this guy? And I'm like, yeah. And I feel this is a superpower.
That's funny. Well, that's all right. That's all right. We've had some good ones with that question. So definitely, yeah, especially the bands that don't speak English primarily. They're like, what?
Yeah, look, and I don't think Justin Bieber, I mean, he might watch a Murder Metal Mayhem thing, and if he does, look, I'm sorry, dude, it's just your music.
Yeah, exactly. And he's Canadian too, right, Shane?
You got it. Unfortunately, yeah, you bet. They actually named the donut parts after him.
Very good.
So, guys, what was your first heavy metal concert? How did it affect you? Did it inspire you to, you know, start playing or start a band?
Well, my first heavy metal concert. I'm going to get half here. So, wait, when I was younger, right? Things like Matchbox 20 and Three Doors Down were pretty heavy for me.
Sure.
So I remember seeing, I must have been 7 perhaps, and it was Matchbox 20 with Taxi Ride. And I remember feeling the kick of the drums just echoing through my chest. And I was like, what is this? And it was in this small stadium, and oh man, that was pretty crazy.
First metal gig, though.
The first metal gig was Metallica.
What a fucking
watermark. Which tour, though? Which tour on Metallica?
This is where it gets a bit sad. It was the San Angelo. it was at the Entertainment Center in Sydney, and I remember it well because the guys that were sitting next to us, so I went with my younger sister. That was her first metal gig too. So I changed her irreparably after that. And the guys next to us managed to sneak in like a Bundy Coke in their McDonald's. Drink. Yeah, because McDonald's was right underneath the Entertainment Center, and so they managed to sneak in an
sugar cane champagne. Yeah, I think mine, I'm casting my mind back to the late 90s, mid 2000s. It would have been like, they're not really metal, but Friends of Rom and Grinspoon, who are sort of big grunge punk bands doing the rounds in Australia back then.
Right.
Grinspoon's album, Guide to Better Living, pretty good. I still listen to it. But first metal, I can't remember whether it was Soulfly back in like 2001, because I think I was old enough. I turned 18, whereas none of my friends had, so I had to go solo. And I didn't even own a metal shirt, so I was wearing like an anime complete nerd shirt. And everyone was like a vivid memory of mine. I'm like, note to self, next metal gig, wear black. So there was that, and shortly afterwards, I think the Opeth, like on Damnation and Deliverance, I think it was either that one or the one just after the Watershed. It's blurry to me back there.
All right. Well, Shane, we're
so far good.
Shane, we're going to make him cry when we tell him what our first met. I mean, Shane and I are a few years apart. Obviously, I'm considerably older than you guys, but Shane, why don't you tell us about your first metal show?
Oh shit! For metal, like wouldn't be big shows, but one of the first ones I saw was, I would say, Entombed. I saw them play in a bar, so yeah, oh, that was pretty crazy. And that was like that? For that was like I think it was pre Wolverine Blues, right before that, and so left, so that was pretty cool.
My first metal show, 1983. I know I'm dating myself. Iron Maiden, Peace of Mind. Heavy nice. Show, Metallica. That's why I asked you what tour. Ride the Lightning. I was an arm's length from Cliff Burton. Wow, totally nice. Amazing. So, yeah, that was my first real heavy, heavy show. But Maiden, Peace of Mind. Definitely nice. A good one. But yeah, I always like to tell the younger bands that, because they're like, oh man, like that just sounds really good, it. Dude. Yeah, that's crazy.
Classic.
Definitely. Now I hear a lot of, I'm sorry, I hear a lot of influences when I listen to you guys, a little black metal, some thrash, some old school stuff. But what would you say inspired you guys the most in those formative years when you were doing what you're doing? Any bands you want to mention that might have been, you know?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's Sepultura, Arise, pretty much. That was, I used to, when I was learning the drums, I'm like, I have to learn every song on this album.
Oh, yeah.
And then when I was learning the guitar, I was like, I have to learn every song of this album. So to get that down-picking pace, yeah. And just that the mean riffs. Like I can't describe it any other way. Like the real chunky Sepultura rhythm. Like I said, if I had a time machine, the Arise tour would be the one I would go to.
That's cool.
But yeah, for me, it's just that early Steps and Cannibal Corpse, funnily enough, vocal style, a lot of corpse grinder, a lot of death. It's hard to formative years though, definitely Sepultura and Cannibal Corpse, because I thought it was hilarious how just brutal Cannibal Corpse was. And I was probably maybe one of two people, the other person being my brother, who like, you guys like Cannibal Corpse? And I was like, what the fuck?
Right. That's funny.
And they talk about murdering people and like writing the most brutal riffs ever. And that was just everyone listening to, you know, Limp Bizkit.
right. What about you, Adrian? What about you?
Well, compared to growing up from Sheltered, I didn't have an older brother to instill their will. but yeah, for me, again, pretty generic response. It's definitely Metallica. I remember seeing a clip. I think it was The Unforgiven. James Hetfield just playing that. And I was taken away. It's like the first time I think I'd actually, I don't know, almost developed chills. And I was like, this is really cool stuff. And at the time I was in high school, and from that, I actually, so in high school, I did your physics, chemistry, your maths. And then I was like, you know what, I'm going to do woodwork just for something different. And I actually made a replica Kenny Lawrence Explorer that's one of James Hetfield's wood grain Explorer. So I built a replica of that for my high school wood project. So
very cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, that made it onto the EP, that guitar.
It did. It's still
I played live once. And I was like, never again. Yeah. Because the leaps taken out of it. So
yeah, it's about 100 kilos.
It weighs a ton. And I was like, my shoulders are doing like this. I'm like, fuck me.
Back's ruined forever. I actually feel so big that it doesn't fit in any case you can buy. Like, I got it. Yeah, I didn't think of that.
It's a beast.
Yeah.
I'd say Injustice Brawl for me as well, actually. Again, the down picking and just the mean. I mean, that's just, that whole album is a rhythm guitar solo. Like, and I've always liked rhythm guitar for some reason. So,
yeah. Yeah,
well, that's great. Yeah, I hear a lot of different influences in the album. You know, everything from thrash to death to the black to classic metal, like Maiden and Priest. Like, I just hear a lot. You know, it's great. And so we've asked Australian bands this before, so I got to ask it again. Do you like Vegemite? And if so, how do you prepare it? Have you guys ever heard of the Canadian dish poutine?
So it's Vegemite, yes. It's a staple. If you've had some beers, or if you haven't had some beers and it's the morning, just heaps of butter, a bit of Vegemite on a big hunk of bread it just seems to pull you out of a hangover, being sleepy, whatever it is, it's amazing.
There's actually a good alternative to Vegemite, and I grew up eating this when I was a kid. I think called Tiger Toast.
Never heard of that. No.
Tiger Toast.
Yep.
The kids
love it.
What the hell is that?
toast your bread. You put your butter and your Vegemite on it, but then you melt cheese on top. And then
in lines across,
so it kind of looks like the stripe of a tiger.
Tiger, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and so Vegemite with the melted cheese on toast is extremely good.
That is a winner, actually. Yeah. And again, the kids
really love it.
You've got the fat either side.
Yeah, little extra salt too to help counteract that. Yeah, interesting. That's a new one on me. That's a new one on me, and you guys are familiar with poutine because Shane lives and dies by this shit.
But only through the podcast Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. I reckon like those guys have mentioned a few times. They're sort of New England way.
Shane, why don't you educate these gentlemen?
That is our Vegemite. That is our comfort food. It's our stereotypical comfort food. So it's you got chips, French fries, we call them, but I guess you guys call them crisps. So we got crisps smothered in gravy with cheese on top. And you can't go wrong with that.
We actually have something kind of similar in Adelaide, and this is a very South Australian dish as well. So we call them hot chips, and it's got
An AB, right?
Yeah, I'm talking about an AB. So it's called an AB.
It's just called an AB. It's named after there's a shop there's one that's called the Blue Shop, and another one starts with A. And there was a battle about which one started it all. I can't remember. So it's just called the AB.
Oh, okay.
And I'm not quite sure how you would call it. Kebab or like a Euros meat?
Baked lamb Mediterranean spices.
And garlic sauce.
With a whole bunch of chips on top.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's a bucket of meat, chips, garlic sauce, and sometimes barbecue sauce.
Oh, wow. That kind of reminds me a little bit of poutine. And similar, I live in the Midwest. I'm originally from New York, but I live in the Midwest now in the United States. And here, the big thing is biscuits and gravy, which are biscuits like, biscuits, I know, like some countries call cookies biscuits, but biscuits like... I don't know how else to explain, like a baked biscuit, not a cookie, with sausage gravy on it. So white gravy with sausage, like ground sausage in it. And it's a big thing here in the Midwest. So
I don't know if this is true. I've heard from an American friend of mine that the best biscuits and gravy are at like the diners on some, like when you're driving down on a hot, like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I would say so. I mean, I've had some really good and some bad biscuits and gravy. When I first moved here, I was like, what the fuck is biscuits and gravy? It, to me, it sounded disgusting because I was thinking brown gravy, and I'm like, that sounds gross for breakfast. But like, I'm Italian and I'm from New York, and we call spaghetti sauce gravy. If you ever watch The Sopranos or like any of those kind of movies or shows, they always refer to it as gravy. So I knew it wasn't that. So I was just very confused. But then when I ate it, I'm like, wow, this is really good. So it's just interesting little cuisines. Like Shane said, we got three countries here, so all kind of weighing in on that. I think that's cool. Now, one thing, speaking of food, now we cover true crime on Murder, Metal, Mayhem. That's a part of our show. We do murder, we do metal, and we talk about some crazy mayhem. But this one, wow, from Australia, we've done some great cases. I mean, we've done Port Arthur, we did Catherine Knight, Tilly Devine, Ivan Milat, David Burney. I mean, a bunch of them.
There's been a lot.
But I've recently heard about this story out of near Melbourne with this woman that poisoned three of her family members with some beef Wellington. Did you guys hear about that one?
Apparently it was doing this for years as well.
The husband said there were multiple attempts on him.
Like little slices of death cap mushrooms,
death cap.
I think.
Yeah, death cap. Wow.
In the food, and it was a dinner party or something that they had, and she my screen's done on me. There we go.
Yeah, she had three of her in-laws over because they were going through a divorce, I guess, and the local minister was trying to get them together to kind of figure this out. And so, she cooked and tried to kill them.
National news, I think it was a bit, it was sort of like a bit culty, a bit religious culty sort of stuff going on as well there. as often is the case. Have you heard of, being that we're a South Australian band, you should cover the Snowtown murders.
We did do the Snowtown murders. We've done a bunch, like Shane said, a bunch. The lady with the poisoning, I'm always just happy when one of these cases is not in the United States, because we have so many of them. It's like, at least somebody else can share in this bullshit. We've done a bunch of good Canadian cases, so everybody's got them, but of course the United States is a pretty big country, so that's where a lot of that comes from. So
it is crazy everywhere though.
It's true. And you guys have got like 300 million, I think, people.
350 million.
So you'd expect a little bit more murder per capita. Well, murder per country, not per capita.
That's true. That's true.
I think Adelaide, I don't know how true it is, but everyone always gives Adelaide shit for being the murder capital of Australia.
Wow.
I don't know how true it is, but I think at the time in the 90s, there was a lot of murdering going on in Adelaide. Up until recently, I mean, really the last sort of 15 years, it's pretty much just been this tiny little city and there's been not much to do and just like satellite cities everywhere. It's recently in the last sort of 15, 20 years, it's built up a lot and it's, a lot nicer, but I can get it. Like people were bored and just out, miles, got nothing to do. Getting drunk, getting murdery.
That's right on. So guys, is there anything else you'd like to add? Some websites or social media? How can our listeners get in touch with you? Maybe buy the album, buy some merch.
I'm going to throw it to you. Manage most of those.
With this album, we sort of just threw it out there. You can listen to it for free without paying for it on Spotify and YouTube. But we do have a Bandcamp site, which people can go to, listen to it if they like, and purchase the album there.
Yeah, so the Bandcamp is executus.bandcamp.com for those who haven't done Bandcamp. I'm sure most of you listeners have. But you can listen to a few songs on there. It's pretty much name your price, $4 or more as well. So we're trying to really just getting it out there. In terms of, we've got our Facebook and Instagram that are sitting there ready for interaction.
That's awesome. I'll link to this stuff in the episode description. So whether you're watching or listening, go scroll down. I'll link to this. I bought their album in Bandcamp. I like to support the bands whenever I can. If they've got t-shirts in the bigger sizes, I buy them. And I think it's important. That's the only way we're going to keep the underground stuff alive is by supporting what these guys are doing. If you want to buy the digital album, that's what I did. You know, it's a cool way to support the band. So I encourage it. I know I try to do it.
Bandcamp always sounds better. I mean, Spotify, I find they're pretty at the bottom compared to Bandcamp. Bandcamp always just has a better quality sound.
Yeah, plus I've been in band since the 80s, and I've yet to see a penny from any of those streaming sites, so it's a bunch of bullshit. It's a friggin' it's highway robbery, and it's wrong, and it's bullshit. I get it's the way of the world, but it just sucks as a musician because you're not getting paid. So I try to push, go buy it, you know, digitally. I mean, $4, for God's sake, that's an amazing album. If you're listening to
that's Australian as well. It is $4 Aussie, so it's an absolute bargain.
For US, that's true. That's true. Well, thanks for doing this interview with us, guys. I mean, this was our last one of the year. We've done some good ones this year, so a great way to end the year with this interview with you. But you're welcome here anytime. You got our email. If you've got something coming up or something going on, you want to get a hold of us. Love to have you back. I always like to play a song to close out the interview to kind of let the people hearing it get a listen of a whole song. So I'm going to play one of my favorites, Provoke Not Your Children to Wrath, so they could check out what you guys are doing. And horns high from here in the United States.
And horns fucking high, guys. Cheers.
Oh, yeah. Look at that.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Thanks, guys.
Mother, man.